Good evening and welcome to The Big Fight, a show that is young at 22, the oldest running debate show on Indian news television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. The Taliban wants the world to believe that they've changed. This terrorist organization says that they're ready for a new world order, to offer a new Afghanistan. They want the world to trust them. Now we have four or five instances that we would like to present and put for our viewers to see and decide for yourself whether you can trust them or not. 2021, exactly this year, just a month ago, Indian journalist and a dear friend, Danish Siddiqui, was killed by Taliban. First, they checked his ID, identified that he is Indian, and killed him. So then, obviously, a question will be asked. Can we trust them? They want us to trust them, but can we? This is just 1 month ago. Next, in 2008, the Indian embassy was attacked by the Taliban. Why should we not ask a question? Can we trust them? Can we? Let's take you back to 2001. The Bamiyan Buddhas that were destroyed by this very terrorist organization. And they want us to trust them with the future. The point is, yes, once again, can we trust them? And who can forget those horrific images of 1999? This country will never forget. IC-814, Kandahar hijack. And that's why we ask that question again. Can we trust them? Between 1996 and 2001, there have been public executions, amputations, and stonings. Which is why everyone with a sane mind today should ask this question. Can we trust the Taliban? So on The Big Fight tonight, the question that we are asking is this. To all those people around the world saying, trust them maybe this time around. This is a Taliban 2.0, a liberal Taliban. There's no such thing as a liberal Taliban. So the question is, will trusting Taliban be a global mistake? That's the question that we are asking of all our viewers. Will trusting Taliban be a global mistake? I want to introduce our guest this evening. We've got Manvendra Singh, editor in Defense and Security Alert. Thank you very much, Manvendra, for joining us. We also have Mr. David, author of War in 140 Characters and also a journalist. We have David Loyn, visiting senior fellow in the War Studies Department at King's College, London. We also have Dr. Homira Rezai, a Hazara activist. Thank you very much. I want to start with you, Mr. Manvendra Singh. My question is, India has seen the dark side, exposed to the dark side of Taliban. Your father was the external affairs minister when 1999 happened. We had to trade three terrorists for the lives of 170 Indians. That's how horrific a terrorist organization this is. And then their misery went on and on and on. So my question is, with this new change that one sees, a sort of a PR propaganda campaign on behalf of the Taliban and among other things, this feeling that one must wait and watch, maybe give them a chance, let's see how they'll behave or what they'll do. My question remains the same. What, according to you, is the reality? Can we trust them?
Well, I think to be honest, I don't think the Taliban cares whether you trust them or not. I think what they realize that, you know, the 1990s is not the same era as today. So they've changed their language to in tune with social media realities. But they remain the same, and they will remain the same. I mean, that's their core. And the core constituency of any organization, whether terrorist or democratic, they have to appeal to their core constituency. And their core constituency remains pretty bloodthirsty and, you know, pretty, I think, medieval, to be as polite as I could. And it's a question of time when they show their real colors. And Whether India trusts them or the world trusts them, they don't really care. They'll do it. They'll do their agenda as they feel, you know, it's time to do it.
That's true. Mr. David Loyn, the world over, there is a simple and understandable game of wait and watch, because one really does not know how the situation is developing, what will happen. We still don't know which faction of the Taliban is going to stake claim to form their government, because there are many Talibans, as we are all aware. And then there is a resistance group also. At a time like this, do you think that the global response is in league or in tune with this very fluid situation?
Well, thank you. No, I don't think it is, actually. And I mean, it's very good to be on your program tonight on this really important topic. I mean, I think we're going to see a division. I think we're going to see China, Russia, Pakistan, certainly, potentially quite soon recognizing the Taliban. And I think we're going to see the West waiting it out for the moment. And then India, of course, has a choice as to, you know, which side, as it were, it goes on. India is very successfully, you know, maintained good relations with a large number of countries in the past. But I think, you know, quite soon there's going to be a reshaping of you know, the geopolitics of this region, which comes off the back of this very fast-moving series of events. And I think, you know, the sheer speed of all this, the last job that I did in Afghanistan was to work in President Ghani's office as his advisor 3 years ago on communications. And I've got a book coming out in a month's time called The Long War, which talks of the American war in Afghanistan and talks about the mistakes that they made at the beginning, really, 20 years ago, that led to this appalling scenes this week of this very quick exit from Afghanistan of America. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the West, given the manner of the exit, to have any kind of unified strategy. There's a lot of talk in Europe at the moment about a unified strategy towards the Taliban. But I think you're right, we're going to have to wait and see how this movement is going to show its real face. And there are many faces. There's been a lot of discussion on Taliban social media in recent weeks between the Doha leaders, who've been in Doha for a decade now, you know, living with their families very comfortably, and the Taliban, who've been fighting a really bloody war. This has been very difficult for the Taliban. They've lost a huge amount of men. And those Taliban who fought the war, and I think are much, much more ruthless than the nicely, nicely Taliban who are doing the press conferences in Kabul at the moment and holding conciliation meetings with former President Karzai. I think what's going on in the provinces of taking people out of their houses who are identified as working with the Americans and raping young women, all of those are new. And people say, has the Taliban changed? Yes, in many ways, in my view, having seen them a lot in the past, I spent a lot of time in Afghanistan in the late 90s when they were in power. Hmm. I think they're worse than they were then.
Right. Mr. Patrick Karakos, I want to come to you. You know, just taking off from where Mr. Loyn left, the point is, and this is what India fears, and I want to know your view. India fears that all these weapons that the Taliban has looted, I won't even say procured or confiscated, but looted, these American sophisticated weapons, of course, they will not know how to use them. India fears that this is going to find its way into Pakistan and then will find its way into Jammu and Kashmir. And that's where the real problem is, that eventually Afghanistan will become a soil which will be used for global terrorism. Do you think this is a valid fear?
Well, first of all, can I start by saying that we can absolutely trust the Taliban. We can trust the Taliban to be the same murdering fanatics they have always been. Well, in fact, even worse, as our colleague said. Now, I think the point you make is a very correct one. I wrote a column recently in the Spectator magazine where I said one of the key winners in this whole thing that nobody is talking about is Pakistan's ISI, which, let us not forget, played a huge role in the founding of the Taliban in 1994. Now, you are right. Now, you know, there are many ominous signs coming out of Afghanistan right now, not least that they have, you know, the Haqqani network, who I'm sure you're familiar with, is now responsible for security around parts of Kabul. This is the network that, in conjunction with ISI, was used to launch terrorist attacks against the Western coalition when, after 9/11, the Taliban were driven back into the hills. As you rightly say, Pakistan has always provided the Taliban with a certain amount of strategic depth, a place their leaders could retreat to. And let's not forget, it's where They found Osama bin Laden. When the Taliban could no longer harbor him, he found refuge in Pakistan. I think the point you make is a very correct one. I think what we're seeing in Afghanistan is a reshifting of alliances. Again, I think David mentioned what we're seeing already now is Pakistan, but most notably Russia and China now already talking to the Taliban. China, obviously, people don't realize that amidst all the problems, Afghanistan is very rich in certain resources that are very important now in terms of automotives and things like that. So China is getting in on the ground. Russia is already, they've got Foreign Minister Lavrov has been making very supportive noises. Things are changing. And I think Afghanistan, once again, as it always been, is going to be a battlefield for other proxy wars. And I think central to that is Pakistan. I mean, let us not forget that a perennial fear of Pakistan is encirclement by India, for which Afghanistan, they feel, is very important. Now with Ghani fleeing, they have, you know, to the degree that you can control a monster like the Taliban, they have allies in Kabul. The only sort of, I guess, the caveat there is that they will have to now face a refugee wave. And, you know, as Mr. Frankenstein knows, you can't always control the monster that you create.
Well, you know, this sounds terrible, but what do you do? This is the truth. I mean, anyone who thinks that suddenly you will have a very, and a lot of people are joking about this in India, a Gandhian Taliban is a ridiculous proposition. That's not going to happen. They're using the best of their PR machinery to tell the whole world that this is absolutely different. But really, there is no version, either a 1.0 or a 2.0 to Taliban. They are the same murderous lot as Mr. David was saying. Ms. Pamela Constable is also with us. Ms. Constable, you know, this point on different Talibans existing. So there is one which is in Doha, which wants the world to believe that they are a changed lot. And then a Taliban on the ground, and then the various factions of the Taliban. Do you think all of this will create enough confusion to confuse the world? I mean, if the world is so naive to get confused, that people would want to believe a moderate Taliban negotiating from Doha, whereas there will be a very different lot which may not even listen to them functioning in Afghanistan.
I think it's still a very confused picture, even within and among the Taliban. The leadership that's forming there includes both leaders who've been in Doha and leaders who have been more in the fight, so to speak, or closer to the very senior leadership of the Taliban. So I think that in the top echelons, they very much want to appear to be more moderate, not because they're nice people, but because they know that they cannot govern a very poor country of 40 million people without some sort of international recognition and support. And they know, I'm sure, that they will not get that if they do start carrying out the kind of atrocities to which you allude. Up until this point, a lot of the abuse and violence has come from local fighters who have been asked to do things like secure the airport and man checkpoints in quote unquote the name of keeping security in the capital and other places. And they've had a very difficult time managing the situation, and they've reverted to type, which means they beat people with their rifles, they shoot in the air, they beat people with other objects. This is the way they have done crowd control, because I've seen it myself back in the time of Taliban rule. I don't think this is what the leadership wants to happen, but I don't think they're in full control. As your guest mentioned, things are different in the provinces as well as in the cities. And then a third factor is that there are now protests going on in Kabul and other cities. Young, educated Afghans who did not grow up under this kind of government, who knew democracy, who got educated, who believe they have rights, are actually trying to express them, which is an extraordinary phenomenon to see occurring. And I think this has been sort of a shock to the Taliban, especially the local fighters, the lower echelon fighters. They've got out there, quote unquote, trying to keep order. And as we've seen, the response has been violent. Some of the protesters have been killed and wounded. I think we're going to see this kind of thing continue to happen, possibly even get worse, until there is some sort of real formal governing arrangement that is in, obviously with the Taliban dominating it, but in consultation with people like former President Karzai, Dr. Abdullah. There are people negotiating, and not just with the people who were living in nice hotels in Doha.
Hmm. Dr. Reza, I want to come to you now. You know, as an activist yourself, are you really surprised that the world would much rather gloss over these human rights violations, acts of terror, and actually think that they deserve a place on the negotiating table? Actually give them a chance?
I think I don't see that the West is going to recognize them as a legitimate government. I do see that maybe China, Russia will do so. And as my colleagues rightly stated, that Afghanistan will become a place of proxy war. The violation of human rights in Afghanistan by the Taliban is nothing new. They had started it in the 90s. They continue to do so during the government, and they will continue to do that now that they have taken over Afghanistan.
Rakia Ahmadi, a lawyer as well as a women's rights activist and a minority rights activist, is also with us. I would like to ask you, Ms. Ahmadi, would you like to respond to this question on how global leadership is responding to this Taliban crisis?
I think there is a lack of response at the moment from the global leadership. We've had some responses from countries such as the UK, providing a refugee policy of allowing maybe 20,000 Afghans to come to the UK within the next few years. However, I think that's not sufficient enough. And Canada has a similar plan as well. We've not seen a lot of responses from the rest of the world or the international community. However, plans such as the UK is good. It's good that governments are taking steps to deal with this situation, deal with the humanitarian and refugee crisis. However, I think it's not enough. They're failing to realize and understand the urgency of the situation. There are people there that need to be taken out of the country now. Later might be too late. Tomorrow might be too late. The next week might be too late. They need to be taken out now. There's activists, there's journalists, there's individuals in Kabul that I'm currently in contact with. They're in hiding. They're in fear for their lives, and they're looking for a way to get out of the country. And there's been reports that the Taliban are going door to door, searching for such individuals, searching for people who's
absolutely. And you know, just to add to what you're saying, the Indian government has put this on record today that the Taliban has searched the consulate offices of India and have also started a door to door search operation of all those Afghanis who were affiliated or associated with international organizations. So to this Taliban, which says that we're not going to do any such thing, it's already happening. Sorry, you were saying, Ms. Ahmad.
Yes, absolutely. And as everyone previously mentioned, there are various reasons that we can't trust them as a group. They have made promises of allowing women the rights, but the reality is now that you hardly see any woman on the street of Kabul. Kabul used to be a bustling place. Women used to be in politics. They fought long and hard over the last 20 years to achieve and gain some level of equality and rights in the country. We saw women in politics, in education, women running businesses, owning their own brands and stores and cafes. There's no guarantee that that will continue. There's no woman at the moment in politics. There's no woman running their own stores or cafes at the moment. And whilst they're promising that women will be able to continue with the rights that they've achieved previously, there is no guarantee of that. And whilst most women in conservative Afghanistan may still wear burqa, today's Afghan women have choices that they did not have during the Taliban rule. And I do not think that they will have that choice again in the future.
Okay. Manvin Singh, there are some viewers of ours who want to ask questions and be affiliated and associated with this debate. Srishti Srivastav has asked this question on the Coup app, and I would want to ask you if you want to reply. She says, do you think India will still see Taliban as a terrorist organization, or will its outlook change? Manvin Singh.
Well, technically, legally, and in all circumstances, the UN resolution declaring Taliban a terrorist organization stands. And I don't think, you know, that's been repudiated. And I don't think, you know, India's in a position to go back on its own. It's part of the larger, you know, world community, which recognizes this body as a terrorist group. And I pray and I hope it remains the same. And I don't think, you know, any person in a sane mind would want to change this. And I hope the decision makers keep that in mind and you know, keep that foremost.
No, one must say that the Indian position as of this moment of waiting and watching, many would say that what are you waiting and watching for? This is a terrorist organization.
Well, India,
I must say, it's a mature position, given the fact that there are so many Indians there. We have to make sure that they're safe.
It's so mature that, you know, you get taken for granted over the years. I mean, you are a neighbor of Afghanistan, you know, in all senses. It's a cultural neighbor, historical neighbor. And India has played a pretty poor role in Afghanistan today and in the past. You know, you have more resources than anybody else around. And you still haven't done enough. I'm making, you know, constructing the parliament building, constructing dams is very good. But, you know, it's the people's, the daily lives that gets affected. And there's something that India's, you know, lacked sincerely.
No, what could we have done? Manmohan Singh, this is very interesting. What could we have done? I mean, investing in infrastructure in Afghanistan, building people-to-people contact. I mean, an Afghani on the street has a very good image of India.
What is a good image? You know, how do you tabulate you know, people to people contact? How many tourists, Indian tourists, have been to Afghanistan? Hmm. How many Afghan tourists have been to India?
Fair.
That's people to people contact. It's not, you know, government officials talking to some journalists in Kabul. That is people to people contact. It's people interacting with people.
But what
in their
would we
own...
rather do?
They've got a we huge market in Bollywood films, if I might say. Every stallholder in Kabul sells Bollywood films. So India, I mean, India's soft power across the region, you know, stretches right up to the Hindu Kush. Sure. Can I just widen this out, Sanket, into one major challenge that that Afghanistan has, that the Taliban have, that we haven't talked about? I mean, Pam mentioned the extraordinary act of resistance on the anniversary of Independence Day yesterday, of people protesting in the streets, carrying the Afghan national flag, which the Taliban have now taken down and replaced with their own white flag. But they're also potentially facing armed resistance from the Panjshir Valley, the last place in Afghanistan holding out against them, the last province, the smallest province in Afghanistan. And Amrullah Saleh, the former vice president, has gone to Panjshir. He's met up with Ahmad Massoud, the son of the legendary commander Ahmad Shah Massoud, who held out against the Russians and then, of course, famously held out against the Taliban. So Panjshir held out in both of those two wars. And those two men are now beginning to get people around them, former special forces soldiers who didn't want to surrender to the Taliban. And I think potentially we could see in the days to come the beginnings of an armed resistance, some kind of an insurgency coming to against the Taliban from the Panjshir Valley. So they haven't taken the whole country. And I think that could be a challenge to the international community. And it could actually give a get out to some of those countries who don't want to recognize the Taliban, as they didn't in the 1990s, because they don't control the whole country.
Yes, I think that's a very interesting perspective. And that also gives, for instance, we interviewed the former minister in the Vajpayee regime, Mr. Yashwant Sinha, and we'll play out that interview in just a short moment, where he said that India, if there is such a situation, you stand by a force that stands by democracy in Afghanistan. I think I can, maybe that could be one of the positions that India may take. But David Patrick Harakos, my question to you is, traditionally it is seen, and in the Indian context, we've seen this in Jammu and Kashmir over and over again, that terrorist organizations negotiate only to buy time and regroup. Do you think that this classic toolkit, as is often said or used in India, do you think this could be the Taliban toolkit in Afghanistan? That you want to negotiate in Doha only to regroup as a proper full-fledged terrorist organization?
Look, the issue here is, like, what do you negotiate with the Taliban about? I mean, in the end, you know, perhaps a more extreme version, but what were you going to, you know, negotiate with ISIS about? What are the Taliban goals that you can reasonably negotiate over? I'm not really sure. I think, look, I think, you know, again, I agree with David. I think, you know, already Ahmad Massoud, the son of Ahmad Shah Massoud, is already in the Panjab Valley. He says he's writing about, he says that they've been collecting weapons for years in the expectation of this. He says Afghan army is defecting them. Now, I'm not sure how much of this is true, but what is absolutely clear is that this is not going to be uncontested. And look, what we're seeing now, I think, you know, it's not the end. People have this feeling that this is the end of something. It's not. It's the beginning of something. And it's going to be long and it's going to be bloody. And first we're going to see the executions and the torture and the rape and all of this stuff. And then we're going to see the fight back. And then we're going to see the foreign interference and we're going to see the refugee waves. You know, this is a long time coming. In terms of recognizing the Taliban, I mean, again, I think, you know, the international community, that sort of hollow phrase, but they will look for an excuse not to. I mean, I don't think anyone in the EU or the West is going to recognize Taliban. I think most countries won't. I think, as we say, Russia and China will for various reasons, perhaps certain other countries. But what we have here is, you know, is the takeover of state through armed force, or the majority of a state, by a bunch of, you know, jihadists, essentially, a bunch of extremists. So there's nothing to negotiate with them, as far as I'm concerned. I'm curious as to what's the quid pro quo here. Like, you only kill half the people and torture half the people you're going to do. I mean, I didn't really see something's up for negotiation. Perhaps around the periphery.
What do you negotiate with a terrorist organization? You're right.
No, but look, I'm sorry, but like, there's some organizations that have you know, concrete means, perhaps, you know, the reconquest of a certain or sovereignty or something. But there's an end. You can make peace with the IRA in the end. I don't understand what there is to negotiate with the Taliban. Perhaps, as I say, that on the peripheries, perhaps with, you know, allowing more Afghans who worked with the UN and the West to leave, fine. On these side issues, yes. But the central issue is I see there's nothing resolvable here.
All right. Sure. I'm afraid I've run out of time, but thank you very much to all of you all, Mr. Manvain Singh, Dr. Razai, Rakia Ahmadi, David Patrick Arakos, Pamela Constable, as well as Mr. David Loyan. Great pleasure talking to you, Mr. Loyan. Hope to see you in India sometime soon. Thank you very much. Before we move any further, and we'll also get you an interview with a TV presenter, TV anchor, Khadija Amin, who has been told by the Taliban. Remember all this talk about how moderate Taliban has become? They've told anchors, female anchors of the state broadcaster, don't come to work. That's their face. Can we trust them? That's the question we'll keep on asking. And on the Coup app, we had this poll. We carried out a poll where we asked this simple question. Will trusting Taliban be a global mistake? 92% of you say yes. 8%, only 8% of you entitled to your opinion say 8%, say no. All right, before we head into a short break, here is that interview with Khadija Amin. Let's play that out. All right, joining us right now is Khadija Amin. She's an anchor, TV anchor, who was turned away because the Taliban asked the organization to do so. Khadija, thank you very much. First of all, really admire you for your courage to come out and speak about this. Would you like to tell our viewers what exactly happened?
Thank you. I'm Khadija Amin. I'm a news presenter in National TV of Afghanistan. On Sunday, when we went to office, everything was normal, but suddenly they say for us that to leave the office. So hum logo ko majboor kiya gaya ki tum log office chhod kar apne ghar par jaiye. Fir and I come back to home, and it's about 6 days that we are at home. One day I went to office, I talked with them that please allow me, I want to come to continue my work as an anchor. They said no.
जी खदीजा, मैं आपसे ये पूछना चाहता हूँ कि आपको क्या लगता है कि क्यों आपको वापस घर भेजा गया? तालिबान ने कहा इसलिए?
या तालिबान ने कहा कि अभी तुम लोगों को घर पर रहना चाहिए क्योंकि हम लोगों का अभी कुछ भी मालूम नहीं है, पता नहीं है कि क्या होगा. अब तक हम लोगों ने ये डिसाइड नहीं किया है कि women can come to TV or not. So you might stay at your home and just wait for our call. We will call you and we will tell you that you can continue or not. This is now, it's not fair because there's nothing clear. No one knows that what will happen. So in this case, you might be at home.
Khadija ji, Taliban bar bar har kisi ko ye keh raha hai ki ab hum women's rights mein vishwas rakhte hain, औरतों को रिस्पेक्ट करते हैं, वो अपना काम कर सकती हैं, वो कुछ भी कर सकती हैं. आपको लगता है कि तालिबान की इस बात को ट्रस्ट कर सकते हैं? कैन यू ट्रस्ट द तालिबान व्हेन दे से दिस?
मैंने कहा, मैंने उन लोगों को ये भी कहा कि अगर तुम लोग चाहते हो कि तो लोग तुम पर विश्वास करें, तुम लोगों पर ट्रस्ट करें, सो मुझे इजाजत दीजिए कि मैं जाऊं और न्यूज प्रेजेंट करो. ये बहुत मुहिम है, ये बहुत इम्पोर्टेंट है फॉर ऑल ऑफ अस. इफ यू अलाउ मी दैट आई कम हियर इन नेशनल टीवी, आई प्रेजेंट न्यूज, सो एवरीवन विल ट्रस्ट एंड दे विल से या नाउ द तालिबान चेंज, दे रिस्पेक्ट टू वुमन, दे विल दे रिस्पेक्ट द वुमन राइट्स. सो दिस इज वेरी इम्पोर्टेंट फॉर मी, फॉर एवरीवन दैट हु आर लिविंग इन अफगानिस्तान और all around the world. It's important that once you allow me that I present news. So yes, you're saying for us that we have respect to you, to all women. So please allow me to I present the news. This is very important because now there's not any woman reporter in national TV and there's not any woman anchor in national TV right now. Just there are all men.
Khadija, I want to ask you this question. Do you trust the Taliban? Can you trust them? Aap bharosa kar sakti hain un pe?
Main chahti hu ki un logo par bharosa karu kyunki un logo ne kaha ki we respect women. So it's very early that I say no, we can't trust. Up to tomorrow morning, I'm just waiting for this that they call me and tell me, Khadija, now you can come and you can continue your job. So I'm just waiting up to tomorrow. Tomorrow everything will become clear that if they allow me, so maybe at if they tomorrow they didn't say for me or call me and they stop to stop me, that didn't allow me to go office. So we will decide that no, Taliban didn't change their the past 20 years ago, Taliban, and they don't have any respect to women. But I think it's early. We might, I want to wait up to tomorrow that what will happen.
Khadija, as a journalist, when you see images of women crying, women upset, do you think that they are responding to the images of the past? Ki itihas mein pichla jo experience raha hai unka, uski wajah se women are unhappy with the fact that the Taliban is back.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone have jab 20 years ago, Taliban was in Afghanistan. Everyone have very bad memories from them. So now the women can't accept that they be in Afghanistan and their regime be in Afghanistan. All women that are living in Afghanistan, they are unhappy from them. They have lots of very bad memories from that that time. On that time, I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. So I don't remember that time, but sometimes my mom or some other women, my aunt, they are telling me these stories about that regime. So I think the woman can accept the Taliban being Afghanistan.
That's going to be my final question to you. Aapko lagta hai that women stand a chance of any form of equality in a Taliban regime? Can the Taliban ever respect women? The fact that they never respected democracy, do you think that they can respect women?
I want just ask from Taliban, if you're saying that we respect women, so why in these during of the, from the agreement that Afghanistan, the Taliban and America signed, why in these duration just from these, from the Taliban side, just the men were? From Afghanistan side, we had women, but from Taliban side, there was no one, no, there was not any woman. So why? If you respect the women, so why it was like this? And now we must wait just for up to tomorrow that what will, what they are going to decide, what's their decision about working women, especially in TV, because in other private TVs, they don't have any problem. The anchor of private TVs are still working. But in national TV and governmental TV, they didn't allow us.
Hmm. Let's hope that if they say that women will get their rights, that is exactly what happens. Because if it does not happen, this will just be tall speak and not the reality. Because the reality, yes, we all know. Khadija, thank you so much for joining us. Aapka bahut bahut shukriya.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Joining us right now is a person who has seen the horrors of the Taliban from very close up. A senior minister in the Vajpayee government who was witness to all the drama that was unfolding around the IC-814 hijack in 1999. He saw it all. And at this moment, when the world is debating whether we should trust the Taliban, I can't think of a better person to be able to tell us what really was this organization capable of doing, terrorist organization capable of doing, than my guest, Mr. Yashwant Sinha. Thank you very much, Mr. Sinha, for joining us. You know, when the world is talking about talking to the Taliban, talking to them, opening up a front, giving them legitimacy, in India, one can't help but remember the horrors of Kandahar in 1999, the turn of the millennium, where India was struggling to negotiate with these terrorists. I want to know your opinion, sir. What do you have to think about negotiating or talking to the Taliban?
Well, if you look at the past, then it's a very horrible picture of Taliban. It's not merely the Kandahar hijacking. I would also like to refer to the demolition of the Bamiyan Buddha,
correct,
such a historic site. Hmm. They tried to erase history by doing this. So, the past is horrible. The past does not give us any scope for having anything to do with Taliban. But having said that, let me remind you that Taliban was in Doha, where India was also invited, and India participated in the recent Doha conference led by the Americans, where Taliban was also present. So we were not squeamish about sitting on the same table as Taliban. And I'd like to remind you that we were so. We were very strict as far as LTTE in Sri Lanka was concerned. And even when the Sri Lankan government decided to talk to the LTTE in Norway, we decided that we'll not participate, not only not participate in those talks, but we'll not even send an observer to those talks. And we are stuck by that. But this time, the government has another, obviously, point of view. And they did not mind sitting with Taliban on the same table in Doha. Now, Taliban has taken over Afghanistan. It was only a question of time, I think, after the Americans came to terms with them and withdrew their forces. It's a very difficult situation, Sanket, in Taliban today, in Afghanistan today. And my recommendation to the government of India will be just wait and watch. Don't be in a hurry to come to any conclusion. Let's see how Taliban behaves in power. in government. Mm. There is no government in Afghanistan.
Correct.
So we have to wait for a number of things to happen before we decide how we deal with Taliban. But Taliban, one, was a terrorist organization. There is no doubt about it. We'll have to wait and watch and see what Taliban 2 turns out to be.
Yes, Mr. Sinha, while the government is doing exactly that, because the sense when you speak to people in the establishment is that our top priority is to make sure that the Indians who are there, stranded there, are safe and nothing happens to them, which is why the wait and watch and no outright declaration of rejection or any reaction for that matter. So they are pretty much doing what you have advised them to do. Having said that, how confident are you that this Taliban is going to be a changed in any way? Because if you see what they're doing right now, for instance, they're dealing with women, what they say and what they're doing on the ground, and also in the context of India. I mean, this is a Taliban which is carrying out house-to-house search. They've raided Indian consulates. So do you think that there is any scope of them being anything but a terrorist organization?
I wouldn't rush to a conclusion, Sanket, at this point of time. We abandoned our consulate in Jalalabad and in Kandahar. And they went and took away the vehicles and maybe even the papers. We have withdrawn our ambassador from Kabul. I wish we had not. He should have been on the spot and telling us what the situation, how the situation was developing. But that has happened. That's a deed done. But the point is that India has to continue to watch the situation in Taliban in Afghanistan. And I am not saying rush to a conclusion, even if Taliban is in control of Kabul at this point of time. But we cannot ignore the fact that there are elements within Afghanistan who are raising their head now, especially in the Panjshir Valley. The old Northern Alliance seems to be reviving. So let's see what happens and then decide what our policy will be. And this will also include the attitude and the behavior of Taliban towards India.
Mr. Sinha, do you feel, and this is a very important point that you're mentioning, do you feel that now is the time not openly to take a decision, but perhaps to be seen the world over to be on the right side? For instance, there is a resistance army. There are people who want to establish Afghanistan as a democracy, and they're fighting for the democratic rights. Whereas on the other hand, you have an organization which has shunned democracy completely. They have declared it as the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. So do you think this could be a moment after some initial waiting and watching for India to choose, you know, the right side, the right of the side of democracy, the side of the resistance movement?
India must always be on the side of democracy everywhere. In all countries. That's my very firm view. But, you know, there are many things in foreign policy, in diplomacy, that you don't announce and do. You do it, but don't make a public announcement. I'm sure the government is in touch with these elements. And we have a record of helping them in the past. If need arises, we must help them. Because we want a democratic Afghanistan. We don't want a terrorist Afghanistan. Hmm.
Very significant. My final question, Mr. Sinha, there is also a fear within the establishment that all the weapons that were left behind, these American weapons that were meant for the Afghan forces that have been left behind and captured and looted by the Taliban now, could, and this is a huge area of concern, could strategically find their way into Pakistan and then into Jammu and Kashmir. And that is what has India worried a lot, that the Afghani soil could be used to propel terror against India and Indian soil using those American weapons.
Sanket, at this point of time, I will not rule it out. India has to be extremely cautious, extremely watchful in dealing with the situation. It's a great tragedy that all the equipment, all the arms which were made available to the Afghan army have been surrendered to the Taliban. Mm. And the Taliban is in control of all those sophisticated equipment and arms. And how are they going to use it? Is it going to remain within Afghanistan or they're going to use it elsewhere? Are they going to be under the influence of Pakistan in order to be able to create trouble in India? All these are things which have to be closely watched. I'll only add at this point of time that so far, Taliban has made some noises which are not unwelcome. They have said they will not allow Afghan soil to be used for any action against any other country. And that includes India, of course. So we'll take note of this, these statements. We'll watch their behavior in Afghanistan, keep our fingers crossed. But I'd also like to tell you that India of 2021 is also not the India of 2001. We are a far more powerful country today. We are the biggest country in the region after China. And therefore, I'll suggest that, we should be in much closer touch with the Russians, who have been our all-weather friend and who appear to be standing with China and Pakistan at this point of time. We should be seen closer to the Russians at this point of time and not so much with the Americans, who have abandoned Afghanistan and the Afghan people.
All right. Mr. Sinha, thank you very much for joining us on The Big Fight.